Headliner Radio, the creative voice.
Hello, and welcome to Headliner Radio, where we are delighted to be joined by Becky Jones, perhaps better known as Saint Saviour, who is here today to have a chat with us about her new album, Sunseeker, which is released on March 22nd. Becky, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you, and whereabouts are you joining us from?
Oh, thank you very much. I'm in London, in Bermondsey, where I've lived for a long time, about 10 years, maybe. I've lived in London for about 20 years, but I'm originally from Teesside.
Okay, lovely. And how's the beginning of 2024 been for you so far? We're currently 15 days in at the time of recording this podcast. Has it been a kind of restful period over Christmas and the new year, or have you been kind of gearing up for the new album release? How's it been recently?
Well, so I have two young children, so it's pretty busy. The Christmas period's pretty busy. Yeah. And then in the new year, I actually came down with the flu, so I was just on the sofa horizontal for a few days, about 5 days, and then the kids didn't go back to school till the 9th. So, it's been busy, but I'm not being able to get back to my music stuff and for a while, up until the last couple of weeks, the last week. So in the last week, I've been making a music video for one of the singles and just practicing, really, because I've got a new band put together.
Okay.
To do some live shows, which will be my first in 9 years.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Okay. Just exciting.
How to do a live show. Yeah. I've kind of forgotten how to do it.
Oh, no, I'm sorry to hear that you were laid up with the flu, but I'm amazed it's been that long since you last toured. What's been, how comes it's the first tour that you'll be doing in 9 years? Because you've released music during that time, haven't you?
The last album of Saint Saviour that I toured was, it was my second album, In the Seams. Mm. Which I made with Bill Ryder Jones, and we went on a tour together like a sort of double headliner. And I don't even remember what year it was. I just know it was, I think, the anniversary of the album. It's the 10th anniversary of that album now, this okay. year. So I was actually heavily pregnant with my first child whilst on tour. And then, so I had a few years of just, you know, becoming a parent and getting my head around that. And then when I was ready to do my third album, Tomorrow Again, it was due to be released in 2020, and then that went wrong. So yeah. So I still released it, and it was actually brilliant. I felt it was pretty well received, and I was very, very happy with the result of it, but I couldn't tour it because of the pandemic. And so then I just got on with making my fourth album, so Sunseeker is going to be the next thing I tour.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it an exciting prospect to be getting out touring again after so long off the road?
It's a funny one. I mean, I just go through waves of different emotions on an hourly basis, basically.
Yeah.
So. One moment I'll just think I'm a seasoned professional, I've done this for many, many years, you know, it'll be fine. And then the next hour I'm like, oh, what if it's not? And what if nobody comes? And what if the set list isn't put together right, or the technology goes wrong, or, you know, so I'm sort of going through the two poles of emotion.
Well, I suppose it will be, obviously you'll be touring the new record, but I guess in some ways, you know, depending on how you're approaching the set list, it's kind of like touring the previous album for the first time as well, if anything's getting an airing from that.
Yeah, that's the thing, because in the time that I've been away, maybe the approach to many elements of putting on a live show are different. So, for example, never before would I have looked at streaming numbers to make decisions about what songs to play. Mm. But now that makes sense to do. So I've been doing that. I've been looking at what the popular songs are.
Yeah.
And then a lot of those are from Tomorrow Again. So I'll probably put a lot of Tomorrow Again into the set. But then Tomorrow Again was quite electronic, and this new album's quite traditional band ensemble type stuff with strings and brass. So, you know, just traversing the two different worlds is something that I'm having to consider when putting a set together. But I've got a new group of musicians that I'm working with, and they're really great, and they're experienced in that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, excellent. So, you know, coming on to Sunseeker, which is your fourth album to date as Saint Saviour, can you kind of tell us the background to this album? You know, when did work on this album first start to begin? What's the kind of, I guess, the backdrop for this record, what was the kind of its backstory, I guess?
So it's quite a complex one. First of all, I was thinking about the musical context and thinking about things that I wanted to try and achieve musically. And I was really, really inspired. And I mean, this is an album that's been out for years, and I've listened to it for years and years. But there's an album by Jens Lekman called You're So Silent, Jens, which I've always loved. And I think I was looking for ways for me, as in my guise as Saint Saviour, which has previously been pretty introvert and pretty sort of just inward looking and quite introspective and down tempo. And how could I make cheerful music, and what's my version of cheerful, upbeat, up tempo music? And so I started to mine my musical. Because I love all music, so I have to go through different eras and work out what's my version of cheerful music. And so what I got to was, and this You're So Silent, Jens album is a good example of, is how to use samples. And on that album, he uses Motown samples and psychedelic pop samples and Belle and Sebastian samples. And I love the kind of floral, bold, cartoon-esque and quite 60s feeling of that album.
Yeah.
And what makes it fresh is his lyricism and his personality and his voice over these sort of vintage ideas. Mm. And I just love that album. But as I got more into working out a format for composing the album, I was reminded that it's actually a nightmare to sample lots and lots of stuff. So I started to think about composing cheerful ideas of my own. So I was listening to a lot of baroque pop and 60s stuff like The Zombies and Margot Guillain, and lots of French pop as well. And I started to construct ideas inspired by that, really. So I was really Sunseeker in the short version is, it's me trying to be a bit more cheerful, and that's what the title's about as well.
Okay, that's really interesting. I mean, was there anything in particular that kind of prompted that decision to try and, you know, discover your more cheerful side, if you like, or to kind of channel the more cheerful aspects of your creativity into music? What kind of led you down that track?
A mixture of things, really. Firstly, I personally feel like I've sort of hit a point in my life where, and it's probably parenting that's done this to me, but it's not about me anymore, and I don't take myself as seriously anymore. So things like that just come into play when I'm writing songs, when I'm sitting at the keyboard and just coming up with the initial spark. It's less about woe is me, and it's more about let's go outside and be in the sun and be in a playground for 8 hours and run and tumble. And, you know, I suppose becoming a parent has forced me to play and have an outward looking perspective and get out in the sunshine. And yeah, so that was kind of it. But then also, I think maybe I don't want to really focus on this as an idea, but it was definitely, the lockdown was horrible, and I just wanted to make something that was about positive vibes.
But
then ultimately that isn't my natural personality a lot of the time. So Sunseeker still does have quite a bit of introspection. But the intention was to try and achieve more of a balance this time.
Yeah. And how did you go about creating a sort of sonic aspect to this album that reflected that cheerfulness? Because obviously there's the kind of melodic nature and the lyricism that will channel that. But what was the process in kind of reflecting that in the music? And maybe you could tell us a little bit about what Bill Ryder Jones perhaps brought to that in his role again as producer, who you've worked with before. So yeah, how was that something that you were conscious of right from the off, with reflecting that aspect of the record within the kind of sonic palette, if you like?
Yeah, I think I went to Bill and Natty, his engineer, with a palette of key sonic reference points. I knew that I really love the sound of Designer by Aldous Harding, the way that John Parrish has recorded acoustic guitars and the voice and everything. So we were doing a lot of trying to achieve that kind of beauty and simplicity of the acoustic and nylon string guitars quite a lot. So the album has quite a lot of plucking and layers of plucking, which I think is just, I've always loved that sound. It always makes me think of Edelweiss from The Sound of Music and amazing bossa nova records. And I just love the sound of plucked nylon strings. So we were aiming for that as a kind of, we were going back to that sound quite a lot. For example, I really love the intimacy of A Picture Is All I Have, which Orlando Weeks featured on. There's something so placid in the way that guitar part progresses along, and then the beat just really gently comes in with brushes, and it's just got so much oxygen in it, which I felt just opens it up and allows the beauty to shine in and out. And
yeah.
So it was a lot of like looking at guitars, which is fairly new for me because I come from an electronic background. So previously I'm using a lot of synthesizer sounds. And so yeah, that was a key part of it.
Nice. I mean, could you tell us a little bit about your relationship with Bill Ryder Jones and the kind of collaboration that exists between you both, and kind of what works so well on that regard? What is it that kind of makes him a good foil to have with you in the studio, and obviously someone who you've worked with multiple times? Are there any kind of key things that just click into place when working together, that each of you, any qualities that each of you brings out of one another? How does that relationship work?
There's loads of stuff. I mean, I've worked with Bill since In the Seams, and we often laugh about recording that album because it was just such an absolutely amazing time. And then from that point on, we sort of stayed in touch, and we definitely firstly, as people, we share a lot of humor. We have a very similar sense of humor, and he's very funny and he makes me laugh a lot, which is something that I just love. Anyone that makes me laugh. I love laughing. So, he cheers me up and makes me laugh a lot. But then he's just, we share a lot of reference points in terms of music. We appreciate very similar things about certain songwriters and approaches to harmony, approaches to lyricism. And sometimes what I, particularly with Sunseeker, what I found was that there was a couple of tracks definitely that I think Bill initially wasn't really into, and got a bit, he has this thing where he'll get a bit frustrated and he'll disappear out of the studio and you just think, oh God, is he going to lose his rag about something? And then he goes out for a smoke and then he comes back with an inspired idea for how to arrange this weird chord sequence that I've come up with. So I think there was maybe on this album a couple of times where I maybe challenged his taste a bit and he was forced to kind of find his way out of this weird kind of thing that I'd created, that what was just really, he couldn't quite get his head around it or something. Because there's a couple of songs where the harmony moves in a really weird way, or it suddenly goes into a strange B section that doesn't seem to make much sense, or so that was very interesting to watch him go off and then come back after a smoke with an amazing genius idea.
Yeah, that's quite good, isn't it? I suppose, to be, you know, having made a few albums together, to still be able to kind of test the waters in that way and kind of push things in unexpected directions rather than, you know, going through the motions.
Another really important thing about working with Bill is he's one of the very, very few people that I feel comfortable tracking and comping vocals with. Mm. Previously to working with him, I've always recorded my own vocals and tracked and comped them myself. So essentially all I'm ever doing in a studio with someone else is arranging other instruments. But with Bill, both times I've recorded vocals with him, and he just knows my voice, and he knows what I'm listening for, and, you know, what I'm trying to achieve with my voice. So that's a really special thing.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, there's obviously, you've spoken about the thematic shift in pace with this album with regards to some of the trying to tap into more cheerful mode of songwriting, if you like. But was the actual writing process different in any way to your previous albums? Did you kind of implement any different creative methods or techniques to kind of tap into that a little bit more, or were you still kind of writing in the same kind of style that you would typically write?
Yeah, I, from Tomorrow Again onwards, and I just essentially did more of it with Sunseeker, I had to change my technique because of having children. So suddenly you have to know how to will your creativity to happen at certain times, and how to make it turn on and then go to the school pickup, and then, you know, you're working between drop off and pick up. So I that changed a lot. And then, but with Sunseeker, what I was doing was I set myself periods of time to do different things. So the first period is me improvising singing into my workstation. I use Ableton Live to write songs. So I'm playing the keyboard and singing a cappella, not a cappella, I'm singing completely improvised. So I'm just like, do, 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 and not singing any words, or sometimes just phonetic sounds or something. And then once I've done about 2 weeks of that, I try and write about 5 sketches a day of me just singing a melody. And then after about 2 weeks, I've got a long playlist of those recordings of me just singing improvisation. And then the next period I go through is walking for hours and hours every day, listening back to my melodies. And I'm just going to myself, okay, number one is rubbish, number two is rubbish, number three is rubbish, number four is amazing. And then I'll start writing lyrics for number four. And I just go through it like that. So I basically write songs in pieces like a jigsaw.
How did you find that? Like you said, when you started having to write and kind of be creative within those parameters of, you know, like the school drop off and pick up, did that force you? Was that like a really challenging process, or did it kind of force you to kind of, I don't know, be more economic or efficient with your creativity and your creative process? I just wonder how you adjusted to that from, you know, having previously not had to factor in those parameters.
Yeah, it just forced me to drop any concept of trying to perfect anything, because previously I was a bit, we all have a perfectionist streak, and it's just how much you allow it to distract you from actually getting anything done. And before, it was probably distracting me a bit too much. Now, when I became a mum, I was writing stuff whilst walking with the buggy around the park, and I'm just singing a cappella into my phone and then typing lyrics in a cafe while the baby's asleep or while I'm breastfeeding or whatever. And the reason I sort of, what worked for me was I had a success with something that I'd written whilst sitting on the toilet seat watching my child have a bath. And I was under so much pressure, and I had to just, my daughter was in the bath, and I'm sitting on the toilet seat just singing into my phone. And that melody and lyric was used, and it's been quite a successful release. Not for St. Saviour, it was for a different artist. And that just made me realise, Becky, you know, there's more to, there are so many ways to be creative, and it's just about getting ideas down, and you can tidy them up later, and all sorts of stuff like that, where I'm having to make lots of concessions, but realizing that ultimately, often the first thing that comes out is the best idea.
Yeah.
And you don't need to do too much sometimes. And sometimes you do.
Yeah. Do you think sometimes having, you know, for whatever reason, doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, connected to parenthood or anything like that, but having kind of limitations, I guess, on the amount of time you can spend on certain creative endeavors can actually be quite a liberating process. You know, it's almost a kind of an oxymoron there, but like, yeah, I wonder if it kind of actually makes you even more creative and allows the ideas to flow a little bit more freely when you do have those moments yourself to write and to come up with ideas.
Maybe it's something to do with the idea that the parameters are taken out of your hands, so you have so little control. All you can do is sort of shoot for the moon in that 10 minutes that you've got. I'm endlessly fascinated by the creative process our brain's going through, and what's going on when we're not trying, and what's going on when we're asleep, and what's going on when we're, because I find that, I mean, and most creative people will say, there's often little to be achieved by sitting and sort of bashing your head against the wall for an idea. If you get to that point, you've just got to walk away. And in the walking away and in the taking a break, that's where your subconscious is knitting it all together for you. And then it seems to come out of nowhere on the walk home from the gym or the school run.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating. You know, looking at creative processes and things like that are always quite intriguing. But yeah, I do think that, what is it that makes those things happen? Like you said, normally the best thing you'll come up with, it could be the first thing that you do, or in that moment of taking a break after laboring away at something for ages, that will be when the spark kind of ignites. So much is happening in the subconscious.
Actually, I think it's hugely reliant on routine as well, because when I think it was when I'd first graduated from uni and I was thinking, right, I need a process now. So I was doing a bit of research, and I came across Mason Curry's book, Creative Rituals. And it's just a whole collection of examples of different creative people through the arts, through literature, composition, literature. and what else, film, just all different types of creators. And it doesn't talk much about what they actually create. It talks about their routine, what time they wake up, how many hours they work for, what they do after that. Do they resume work after a break? Do they finish for the day? And it was so amazing to read what kind of, what time Leonard Cohen gets up in the morning and what he drinks before and how many hours he writes for. And I started to think, oh, wow, that's so cool, because it's about routine. It doesn't matter when the routine is, but it's about regularity. And maybe there's something in your, maybe your brain gets used to giving you creative ideas at a certain time. So, yeah, I love that book. I'd recommend it to anyone.
Yeah. And what's it called again?
It's called Creative Rituals.
Okay. I'll have to seek that out. It sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's great.
So as for, you said you've got a new band together for taking this album on tour. When does the tour get underway, and what kind of locations do you have penciled in at the moment?
Well, it's not really a tour. It's just three gigs. I think just they're kind of showcase gigs that are just scheduled to around the release of the album. The first one is, let me have a look. I think it might be Manchester in March. Yeah, the first one's in March. Manchester on the 27th of March. That's at the Deaf Institute, which I've played a few times and I really love. And then on Thursday, the 28th of March, I'm in Stockton-on-Tees, which is my hometown, at the Georgian Theatre. And then on Saturday, the 30th, I'm in London at the Courtyard Theatre.
Okay, fantastic. And do you know at this point if there'll be any more kind of shows throughout the year, or is it just these three for the time being and then seeing what pans out?
Yeah, I think, yeah, we're just sort of seeing them as a testing the water situation with me being away for so long. Mm. Yeah, it's just let's see what happens kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Becky, for taking some time to have a chat with us. I do really appreciate it. It's been really interesting chatting to you. And I wish you all the very best with the album and with the live dates.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much for having me.
Headliner Radio, supporting the creative community.